I'm not preaching at anybody else, but y'all are all happy with that. I know we have been going on this topic for a long time. We covered Titus and 1 Timothy, and we should finish 2 Timothy today, and that will finish this series of lessons on the responsibilities of the minister. But we are trying to cover it thoroughly because of the fact that this is one of those things that is so confused in the religious world. The religious world has blurred the lines between the pastor or the elder and the preacher, and they've kind of combined the two into one job or into one role, and tried to have one person who was the preacher and the pastor and these kinds of things. And we wanted to go through these things. We've looked at the responsibilities of elders. We've looked at the responsibilities for deacons. And now we're looking at the responsibilities for the minister. We see the differences. There are some similarities. There are some areas that overlap. We see, for example, in the work of the elders, rather in the qualifications for elders, that an elder must be apt to teach. And, of course, as the minister, preaching and teaching is one of the primary functions. And so there are some areas that overlap. And that's a good thing. Imagine, if you will, a shelter of some kind with a roof of different pieces. You might think of the shingles on your house, or you might think of just some pieces of wood, or any number of other things, the tin on the top of a trailer, or any number of things. And as long as they're overlapped, then when the rain comes, everything's okay. But if you have a time where there's a gap between this piece and this piece, when the rain comes, you're going to get a leak. And that's one of the things that God tried to avoid when he planned and designed the church. He overlapped the responsibilities from one to the other so that there wouldn't be an occasion for leaks, so to speak. There wouldn't be an occasion of falling through the cracks. He wanted to make sure everything was covered. And because of that, he has those overlapping areas of responsibility. I wanted to begin in 2 Timothy chapter 3, and we're going to finish 3 and 4 today. I apologize for my voice. It may be a little annoying to you this morning. I've had a cough all week, and wreaked havoc on my throat. But hopefully we'll be able to make it through today. Chapter 3, we want to look at the first 5 verses of this chapter. Paul gives a little bit of prophecy, I guess you could say, to Timothy. He says, "This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come." Well, you know, it's interesting, some people talk about the last days, and they're talking about all these things that they think they find in Revelation, and they think that they're talking about all sorts of really miraculous kinds of things occurring, all sorts of unbelievable things a lot of times that they think are going to happen in the last days, which they I guess would be just the last year or so before the end of the world, and they talk about all the signs and all of these things. But notice, Paul warns Timothy about the last days. And it's interesting to see that. Of course, we know, if we've studied the Bible well, that the last days is simply a reference to the Christian age. In Acts chapter 2, in verse 17, Peter, on the day of Pentecost, speaks of those same last days. He quotes the prophet Joel. And Joel, of course, was quoting God. But he said, "It shall come to pass in the last days, saith God, I will pour out of my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, and your young men shall see visions, and your old men shall dream dreams, And he goes on to tell how so wonders in the heavens, verse 19, and signs in the earth, blood and fire and vapor of smoke, verse 20, then he says, the sun shall be turned into darkness, the moon into blood, before that great and notable day of the Lord comes. Now, we read those things, and that sounds like a frightening thing, and people try to apply that to the end of the world. The blood and fire and smoke and the sun's going to be darkened and all these things. And, oh, that's the end of the world. That's the end of the world. But what Peter says that applied to was that very event that was occurring on the day of Pentecost. He says, for these are not drunken as you suppose in verse 15. Seeing it is but the third hour of the day. In other words, it's only 9 o'clock in the morning. But this is that which was spoken by the prophet Joel. And then he quotes that in the last days. And so when Paul talks to Timothy about that in the last days perilous times shall come, they're already living in the last days because the book of Timothy was written after the day of Pentecost. It's already in the last days. So Paul's warning Timothy, any time now these things are going to happen. Perilous times shall come. And they still do. Perilous times have come from that time till this time. And perilous times are going to continue until the end of time. They're going to continue to occur. And notice what he says about the situation. For men shall be lovers of their own selves. Selfish. That's what they're going to be. They're going to be lovers of their own selves. Covetous. Not happy with what they've got. They want what everybody else has got. You don't know anybody like that, do you? Boasters. All you have to do is turn on the TV to a sporting event and you'll see some boasting. Proud. Oh, to think, you know, it's amazing sometimes to see how proud people can be. People that think they're above the law. There are a lot of people like that. They're so proud of themselves. They don't think the laws apply to them. They don't think anything that applies to everybody else is for them because they're so proud of themselves. They can be blasphemers. Speaking all sorts of evil against God and man. They'll be disobedient to parents. I've never yet seen any children that fits, have you? Never seen any that are disobedient to their parents. But see, what we've got to understand is, it's not something new. Paul was telling Timothy these things are going to happen in his lifetime. That was nearly 2,000 years ago. If they were going on back then, what makes them think that they're not going to be going on today? They're going to be unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truth breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. Didn't that describe our world? Paul couldn't have described it any better, I don't think, if he lived here. And then notice verse 5, what he says. Having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. From such, turn away. Remember that when God created man, he created him in his own image. Because of that, as human beings, we have a form of godliness. Because we were created in the image of God. But there are a lot of people who, even though they were created in the image of God and they have that form of godliness, they don't take advantage of the power that they have of being God's children. In We're all God's children in that He created mankind. But we can take advantage of that and become His children in a special way by becoming Christians and accepting the power. And with the power also comes the responsibility of living the Christian life. We also think about the fact that there are many have a form of godliness in that they show themselves as being very righteous people. They put on a front or a mask that says, I'm a Christian. I believe in God. I believe in Jesus. I'm right with God. Everything's... But underneath that mask, they're fitting these descriptions listed above here. They put on that mask of saying, I'm a Christian. But they deny the power that comes from being a Christian, the power to change your life and to become like God. Both of those things are possibilities with this idea of having a form of godliness but denying the power. Paul tells Timothy, from such, turn away. Turn away from those people. We sometimes think that we can help everybody, but we can't. There are some people we just need to turn away from. Paul tells Timothy as much. And there are some people that you just need to turn away from. I think that's especially important for preachers, because preachers, a lot of times, and ministers, they don't want to admit that anybody is beyond help. Or that anybody is so far gone that they can't do something to bring them back. But until an individual determines to make these changes in their own life, and to take on that power that God has provided through Christ, until that happens, there's nothing that I can do or that any of you can do to change those individuals. And we've talked before, and it has been discussed on several occasions, that the only person that we can change is ourselves. We can't change other people. All we can do is change ourselves. Those other people are going to have to change themselves. We can't force it on them. Then we look to verse 14. Verse 14 says, but continue thou in the things which thou hast learned and hast been assured of, knowing of whom thou hast learned them. Notice what Paul said. He doesn't just say, believe everything you've ever heard and teach it like it's the gospel. Notice what he says. He said, continue in the things you've learned and been assured of. In our lives, we learn a whole lot of things. But then sometimes those things we learn, when we put them to the test, we fall flat on our face because those things were wrong. But then other things that we learn, when we put them to the test, sure enough, everything's right. And so we're assured of those things. And then notice what he says, knowing of whom thou hast learned them. Who you learn something from can be very important. You wouldn't go to an evolutionist scientist to ask about the creation. He's not going to tell you the truth about it. You have to go to someone that you know is going to tell you the truth about something. You don't want to go to someone who failed out of 8th grade math to do your income taxes for you. We wouldn't want that. We take that to somebody that we know has studied math and they studied the tax laws and they can do those things good. They can do everything in the right way. Well, the same thing in areas of religion. Why would I go to someone who's something, and then when I hear them teach it, and then I look for them, and I can't find that in the Bible, and they can't show me where it is in the Bible. They can't even tell me what book it's in. And yet they expect me to just believe them. No, when somebody teaches me something, they better assure me of it by this. Now, of course, at the time that Paul was writing this, this wasn't complete, obviously. They had different ways then. Paul could assure Timothy of the things that he was saying being true by the fact that he could perform the miracles that he could. He could assure Timothy that these things that he was teaching were true because he passed on those miraculous gifts to Timothy. We talked a couple of weeks ago about the fact that Timothy had a gift in him that was there by the laying on of Paul's hands. Paul had that miraculous ability, like the rest of the apostles had, to lay hands on somebody and give them a miraculous gift. And that was the way they could assure it. The purpose of those miracles was to confirm the word. Well, now that we have the written word, we don't need the miracles anymore. But when somebody teaches something, they better confirm their word with this word. They may not use the exact same words when I get up here and preach and teach. And there are many times when I may use an illustration. I may tell a story of some kind, but I show how it relates to the Bible and how the Bible teaches that same thing. And I use that illustration to help us to better understand what the Bible teaches. Not to just have a story to tell, or not to try to teach something that the Bible doesn't teach. Then we move on to chapter 4. Scripture reading that was read, verses 2 and 3. Paul tells Timothy to preach the word, begins in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering and doctrine. The time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. We talked about that a few weeks ago, and we had several here, and we talked about some of those teachers that have been heaped unto some of the religious world today, how people no longer want to hear sound doctrine. We talked about some of those doctrines that they have begun to teach, and why they've begun to teach some of those things, and have turned away from preaching and teaching the truth, and preaching and teaching sound doctrine. Here Paul warns Timothy about that. They get those itching ears, and they just want to hear what makes them feel good. And you know, we all feel that way sometimes. We don't like to hear things that make us feel bad. We don't like to hear things that make us feel guilty. We don't like to hear things that let us know that we're in the wrong and that we need to correct something, or that make us know that we're not doing something that we should be doing. None of us like that. We like to think that we're doing everything okay. But if we will be honest with ourselves, and if we will be willing to listen to the truth, we will become better as a result of it. But there are some people in our world today who just don't want to hear the truth at all. They don't want to admit that there's anything that they're doing that's wrong, but that everything they're doing is okay, and they'll just keep on doing it the way they're doing it. And so they get people that will teach them and tell them those very same things that they want to hear. Notice what it says in verse 4, that when they turn their ears away from the truth, they'll be turned unto fables. See, that's the only choice. Either the truth, it's either true or it's false. If you're not listening to something that's true, you're listening to something that's false. That's all there is to it. No question about it. And so, there's none of this well, you've got your truth and I've got mine. And well, we've all got our own truth and all that kind of stuff. No, there's truth and there's lies. There's fables. Falsehoods. That's all it is. Truth, true or false. Imagine, I always liked true-false tests when I was a kid taking tests in school because with a true-false test, at least you had a 50-50 chance of getting it right. You know, even if you didn't have any idea, you know, if you just went down through there and guessed, you'd get a few of them right just by chance, just by luck. Well, see, that's the thing about it. It's one or the other. Every statement that is made is either true or it's false. It's either right or it's wrong. Every statement falls into that category. Unless, of course, it's a statement of opinion. Sometimes we state opinions as though they're facts. When I say, chocolate is the best flavor of ice cream, that's not really what we mean. Because we can't make that determination. What we really mean is, I like chocolate the best of all the flavors of ice cream. So we sometimes state our opinions and make them a statement like it's a fact. Well, when we do that, we make mistakes doing that. But when you come down to an actual statement, a statement of fact, it's either a correct statement or it's a false statement. Okay, the city of Butler has 1,634 people in it, living in it. Well, either that's right or it's wrong. We can't say, well, you know, maybe, Well, it's either right or it's wrong. And that's the way it is with truth. Now, on those true-false tests, my teachers never did let me get away with putting maybe. It doesn't work. You can't say, well, maybe. Either it's true or it's false. We've got to be sure that we stick to the truth. Stay away from that which is false. Verse number 5. Paul tells Timothy here, but watch thou in all things, endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist, and make full proof of thy ministry. So here, for the first time in the two books to Timothy, the term evangelist, or even a reference to the idea of evangelism, is brought up. Paul lets Timothy know that part of his duties as a minister is to evangelize. That's not his sole duty. We've seen he has a lot of other things, a lot of other responsibilities. One of those responsibilities is to do the work of an evangelist, to go out and evangelize, to teach the lost, to try to bring them to Christ. And at the same time, we've seen that his primary responsibility and throughout these two books has been the teaching of the congregation, those who are already saved, those who are already Christians, to put them in remembrance of these things, to teach them how, so that they'll know how they might, so that you will know how you must behave yourself in the church of the living God. All of these kinds of things. This was the thing that Paul emphasized to Timothy. Here he says he's supposed to also do the work of an evangelist. The idea being, again, one of overlap. Some congregations just hire a man to do evangelism. They hire a man to just full-time. He has no other responsibilities to the congregation other than the regular responsibilities of every member. But his only other responsibility is to have Bible studies with people to try to bring them to Christ. And he's an evangelist. Many congregations hire a man to cover all of these things. A smaller congregation like we have here. Hire a man who's going to preach. He's also going to teach and to edify the congregation and minister to the congregation. And then he is also expected to do that evangelistic work. And so because of that, He has to divide his time. He can't give the full time that the other man could to the evangelism. But at the same time, he can't give his full time to the preaching that a man who was hired just to preach could. Nor can he give his full time to the ministry of the church. So he's got his time and his effort divided into those three different areas. Because of that, sometimes we become dissatisfied because we feel like, well, he's not doing enough in this area. And the preacher sometimes becomes frustrated, or the minister becomes frustrated, or the evangelist becomes frustrated because I'm not having enough time to do this, or I'm not having enough time to do that, or I'm not having enough time for this. And so it's a constant juggling act to try to fit all of those things in and to do all of those things together. Then, of course, Paul shows in verse 9 the importance of the minister, preacher, evangelist continuing to have relationships with those who have taught him, and possibly even the idea of continuing to learn from them. We see that in these letters, the fact that he wrote these letters to continue teaching Timothy. Timothy had learned everything he needed to know. And every preacher continues to be a student as well as being a teacher. As soon as the teacher thinks has learned everything and knows everything, he's made his fatal mistake. There's always more to be studied and to be learned. But he says in verse 9, do thy diligence to come shortly unto me. And Paul here also lets us know how important it is even for preachers, teachers, even apostles, to have somebody to help them out and to comfort them at difficult times. He wants Timothy to come to him for this reason. Notice verse 10. For Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world, and he departed unto Thessalonica. Crescens to Galatia. Titus gone to Dalmatia. Only Luke is with me. How lonely. He needs some encouragement. He needs some support and some help. He needs some ministering himself. And sometimes the place we see in our brotherhood, I doubt that it's anything new, but we see many preachers who burn out. They just get to the point where they can't do it anymore and they quit. Many ministers who've given so much to the church, who've served so well, and yet they quit. And we ask sometimes why. Of course, there are a variety of reasons, but one of those reasons is that while they were so busy ministering to others, they never had their own needs ministered to. So important for ministers, preachers, evangelists to be able to continue to receive ministering for themselves. Perhaps we're doing better about that today. I don't know. We have many of these little workshops and lectureships and different things, retreats of one kind or another, for them to go to kind of refresh themselves, to renew their energy so that they can come back and make a new start, a fresh start. Paul was feeling a little bit of that burnout, so he wanted Timothy to come to it. And the amazing thing about it is, two people who are both maybe feeling the stress and the strain of the work. Timothy was probably feeling some stress and strain from his work in Ephesus. But when he went to see Paul, no doubt both of them had their spirits lifted because they knew they were working together in that common endeavor. They were working on that same goal. So they could feel uplifted by one another's presence and encouragement. So sometimes that's all it takes. I tell you, it's a great enjoyment to me. Of course, you know my father's a preacher, and just to visit with him sometimes, even to call him on the phone and to ask him about this or that or some other thing, to talk to him about a passage that I'm having difficulty understanding, any number of things. Oh, how it can be so refreshing and uplifting to have that occur. And that's something that all of us need as Christians. So many times we get so excited about serving God, and we serve Him for a while, and we feel tired. We just feel worn out. Sometimes we need to take a little rest. We need to have a little rejuvenation. You know, even Jesus had to have those times when He went off alone to pray with His Father. He had to have those times where He went to a wedding, and He wasn't the one performing the wedding. He was just there to be there. Although His mother did make Him do a miracle before He left, you know. But He had to have times when He could be out in the fishing boat with His disciples and take a nap. You know, there are a lot of those things that we don't think about with Jesus, and yet He had to have those times where He could be alone, where He could get some rest and some recuperation to be able to continue His ministry. Remember, His ministry only lasted 3 years. Imagine if it had lasted as many preachers today who start in their early 20s and preach until they're 60. They preach for 40 years. Imagine trying to come up with new sermons for 40 years. Come up with something interesting to say for 40 years. So, and to have that zeal, and to be able to pass it to others and to be able to spark other people to have that zeal in themselves. It's not an easy thing to do, but it's an important thing that has to be done. And then He warns Timothy. This is the last thing we want to look at. Verses 14 and 15, He warns Timothy about a man who lived in Ephesus named Alexander the coppersmith. If you remember in the book of Acts, when Paul went to Ephesus, when they got there and he saw all the idols, when he went and preached to them, and the people started listening and started believing, and this Alexander the coppersmith was very upset because he was afraid that people were going to stop worshiping the goddess Diana, who was the patron goddess, I guess you could say, of their city, of the city of Ephesus. And him being the coppersmith, he was the one that made all the idols. And so that's where he was making his money. You want to get somebody to be your enemy real quick, turn against their way of making a living. Way to get on somebody's bad side. Well, that's what Paul did with Alexander. He started preaching against these false gods and preaching about the one true God. And Alexander didn't like that. He didn't like that at all. And he gathered a whole group of people together, and they had a riot on their hands in the city and all sorts of trouble as a result of that. And so Paul says, "May the Lord reward him according to his works. Of whom be thou aware also, for he hath greatly withstood our words." There are going to be people who are going to stand against the truth. There are some people that are just going to ignore it. There are some people going to just pretend it doesn't exist. There are some people who are just going to listen and then not do anything about it. There are some people who are going to listen and say they believe it, but just not obey it. But there are some people who are just going to adamantly oppose the Word of God. Alexander was one of those people. You're going to run into people like that. When you try to tell them the truth, they're going to stand so firmly against it. They're going to dig their heels in and grit their teeth and fight against you every step of the way. There are a lot of people like that in the world. I guess one of the most famous people like that in the United States was Madeline Murray O'Hare. She just hated the Bible and the church, any church, it didn't even matter if it was the right church. She just hated the church and prayer, you name it, she hated it. If she could have had it done, she probably would have had the name God removed from the dictionary. I'm surprised she didn't try. She tried to do enough other things, but she was just viciously opposed to Christianity and to religion and all. And there are always going to be people like that. going to be people who are just opposed to the truth. And that is a struggle against those people. And they're going to be, at every step of the way, when you try to teach one person the truth, they're going to come in behind, and they're going to try to dissuade that person from the truth. If you're here this morning, you know the truth. You know that Jesus came to die, and to be buried, and to rise again the third day, to be able to forgive our sin. If you believe that, you're willing to repent of your sin, as Acts 2:38 tells us. And if you're willing to confess Jesus as the Christ, as Romans 10:10 tells us, and you're willing to be baptized and wash your sins away, Acts chapter 9 and verse 22 tells us, you can do that today. If you know that truth, don't let anybody or anything dissuade you from doing what's right. Don't let somebody or something like Alexander stand opposed to the truth and keep you from doing what you know is right. You're here and you are a Christian. You've done those things, but perhaps you haven't been living as you should. Perhaps you just burned out and gave up. Maybe you need to renew your energy and your zeal for God. If you're here this morning and you have any need to respond to the invitation, we ask that you do so as we stand.